All right, I'd like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10, and then we'll answer any questions from the audience. Let's all welcome Sandra from Orange.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Sandra, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I kind of fantasized that no one was going to come today because it's a holiday weekend. This is what I told myself. I put some real effort into that concept. So it was quite a shock when I got here early and the parking lot was already full. So Mary, my dear friend Mary, asked me to speak on Wednesday this week. She cornered me. Total shakedown. It is a cult. But I was taught not to refuse AA requests, that they were meaningful in my sobriety and they may have a purpose that I don't understand. So I said yes. Again, another convenience, you know, thought about by the people in AA that came before us as a way to sort of make it all happen. But I'm grateful to be here sober on a Sunday morning. Memorial Day was just one of many other excuses to start early and stay late. So just to be here with my heart pounding, terrified in front of all of you another day sober is a really good thing, I think. You know, my sobriety date is October 20th, 2004. That's the real one. it's interesting. When I got sober, I was so desperate, and since nobody in my family has ever gotten sober, I didn't know what to do. I don't watch a lot of TV, and I kind of knew something about AA, but I didn't actually connect it with the process of getting sober. So I called around and found an outpatient rehab that I could go to, Cornerstone, Johnny G, and alumni, and I did that 30-day outpatient, and it was terrifying. It really was. But on my 30th day, I was so proud of myself, I celebrated by having a drink. So you get how we got to October 20th. Anywho, we'll get back to that. It's funny now. I really thought I was the only one for quite a while. But now I proudly say I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief. Welcome. I said I come from a long line of people who didn't get sober. And I grew up in an alcoholic home. My dad was an alcoholic, and you know, I don't know if he was trying every imaginable remedy or not, but he drank a boatload of beer. I was thinking about it kind of, you know, between Wednesday and now, as during my appropriately terrifying little segue to this, to speaking today, that I never recall him getting in the car without a beer. It never happened. I never associate getting in a moving vehicle without him grabbing a beer from the fridge on the way out with his keys, and maybe a couple. It's just what he did. And that was true at 6 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock at night and all points, you know, before and after. It was just part of the fabric of my life, alcoholism. And, you know, bad things did happen to him behind the wheel with all that beer. I remember many times, you know, with the lights behind us and him tossing the cans through the hole in the truck window. He was in construction, which is a really handy place for alcoholics if they want to drink a lot of beer on a job site. They just pour the concrete right over the beer cans. Apparently. So I've been told. And, you know, it was just like that. There was just always alcohol around all the time. You know, at dinner, it was, you know, his Jack Daniels with a splash of nothing, but more Jack Daniels. And, you know, it was chaos. It was chaos. It was violent. It was neglectful. And it was a lot of really bad things that a lot of alcoholics grow up in. So I went through high school. And, you know, I was that kid that no one liked. I managed to find a few friends that would have me, you know, along. But I can't say they were probably, you know, part of my fan club. And I took my first drink on grad night. the cup of warm champagne in the little plastic cup that you stick the bottom onto. You know, those kind of flat, yeah, it was bad. But I had another one, and probably a few more after that. And so that was when I really started drinking. It was that summer before I went to college, and, you know, it was on. I, 3 months into my drinking career, walked through a sliding glass door. So that was a buzzkill on the party, and, you know, 50 stitches later, well, I bled all over someone's car. But that's just, you know, I didn't see it in the dark. Nothing to do with the alcohol. I went to college, and I drank a whole lot more. Was in a sorority, so that was convenient to support that effort. And, you know, still managed to do my thing and graduate. And it really wasn't until years later I realized that, you know, binge drinking was also alcoholism. I got sober as a heavy, deep, daily drinker. But I was an alcoholic a long time before. I just didn't know that till there was no place else to run. So I got married, drank a whole lot more, you know, tequila and elegant wines and stuff that professionals drink. And, you know, just went off into a career and a marriage and children and all the things that people do, comma, except for being an alcoholic. So I somehow I pulled it off for a while. And, you know, I really was in denial for a long, long time. Finally, when I got sober, I just was so sick and tired of being sick and tired. I just couldn't do it another day. I hid my drinking a lot. I know people say that, and then they think everyone knows, but they hid it. But my people really didn't know. You know, if you get your wine in a box, it you know, it's very easy to drink a lot of that and replace it before they, you know, catch on. There's no bottles clinking in the recycling when that goes to the curb. And I just, you know, I drank before I went places. I drank while I was at places. I managed to have my husband take me everywhere because at some point I had gotten terrified to drink and drive. Not early on, but somewhere down the road I realized I couldn't pull that off miraculously. And so I just was able to sort of manage, you know, sort of aiding and abetting that without causing any real harm. When I came into the program, basically God sent the Cub Scouts. I have one of those sort of gentle recoveries that I'm grateful for. At the time I got sober, I sort of thought maybe that gave me the opportunity to do a little more drinking. When I was in rehab, I heard a lot of really terrifying stories with some really serious consequences. They're not part of my story, and I'm really grateful for that. I came in with a roof over my head and the car in the garage, with a job, the husband, the kids, all still intact. By just a pure miracle, by the grace of God, go I. Because I could have easily just wrecked it all. So when I got sober, my life had kind of turned into that movie Groundhog Day. Do you ever see that, where the alarm goes off at the same time every morning, and you do a bunch of shit all day? And try to make it different, and yet every day it's the same. Every day I got up and I said, I am not going to drink today. This is ridiculous. Who does that? I took a couple of dozen internet quizzes that says like 2% of the population could join me on my journey. And I thought, I'm probably not, this is probably not right. And yet I still kept drinking like that for just years and years and years. And it was awful, and it was torture, and it was pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Believe me, you do not need any consequences to feel that way. And I earned my seat here, and they're all still waiting for me. It's a daily reprieve. So I got sober, drank at the 30-day mark from Cornerstone. Husband went camping, thought he was safe to leave me at that point. You know, I'm cured, went to rehab. 30 days, we're done, right? He took the boys camping. Big mistake. Accountability was kind of a small part of my early sobriety. So, of course, he had, you know, hidden all the alcohol by that point. We weren't going to just throw it away. I mean, that's crazy. It's a lot of money invested in that. So he put it in the garage. I know. First of all, I did all my drinking in the garage, so I'm perfectly comfortable there. Second of all, that blue bin, just because you can't see through it doesn't mean I don't know what's in it. So I really tried not to drink, but I really didn't not drink. I really just did when I was just desperate. So one day after I had really, you know, gotten sober again, another, you know, period had gone by, and I had a busy day at work, like everybody in the real world does, and then I had to go to an event after work, and there was going to be, it was like a happy hour drinking thing, and I thought by this point, okay, I have a legitimate reason to be there. I checked in with my sponsor before I went. I did my thing there. It was awful. It was Dave and Buster's, which smells like wine the second you walk in the freaking door. And did my deal, walked out, and on to my next gig, which was the Cub Scout meeting. Den Mom. And so there I go into the meeting thinking, okay, this really is true. This really is how it is for me all the time, 24/7. So I go into the meeting, the Cub Scout meeting, thinking that it started at 6:30, like I'm right on time, march, 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 I've done my day just like I'm supposed to, everything's all lined up, and it had started at 6. So I was a half an hour late. So the Cub Scouts were, of course, running amok, as Cub Scouts do when there isn't somebody to put the hammer on them. And their parents are in the back talking like parents do when they want someone else to take their kids for, you know, an hour. And, you know, I just, that was too much for me. That was as overwhelming as my life gets. And, true story. I'd love to make up. I'd love an orange jumpsuit and, you know, a bracelet of some kind would sound so much cooler. And, you know, I just was done. I went home. My husband had two separate cars. He said, well, I'm going to put the flags away and take everything down. And I thought, good, honey, I'll just go home and get ready to start on the homework. And I went straight to the garage, and I got out vodka, because that was all there is, and I don't even like it, and poured it with some Perrier. And I sat down, and I went, holy crap, I'm an alcoholic. And that was my moment of clarity. Thanks to Troop 503. That's my higher power. It's a gentle, beautiful story of humility. You do not need the consequences to earn your seat here. Crazy is as crazy does. And I started to learn a new way, as I didn't know any other way. That's what my people did. That's what we do. That's how it works. And then you're dead. And then I wasn't, and I lived life sober. I go to a wonderful Wednesday meeting with women that I cherish, who've welcomed me into their fold, even though I'm that desperate housewife that no one likes. You know, I came in so filled with shame and self-loathing, I could not sit in a room with myself for years and years and years. And guess what? I just sat there with my seat, and I watched other women walk their journey, and I thought, you know what? I really am not that special. If it can work for them, it can work for me. I have as garden variety story of alcoholism as anybody will ever find. And yet, it's still the daily reprieve to live another life sober, another day. And, you know, I just so cherish this gift, because unless I wreck it, I have it all. It's hard to even put that into words, what that means, what that is to me. And yet, I was perfectly willing to do it for years and years and years. One of the things I really wanted when I came into the program was humility and peace, which people were talking about that today. That was kind of I heard that in a lot of the shares. And I came into the program, I didn't know the Lord's Prayer. I'd never really been to church. I was a clean slate. I thought spirituality was like on Little House on the Prairie. Like, that was my connection to anything religious. It didn't exist in my chaotic family. My grandmother was very religious, but she kept it to herself. Spirituality was personal to her. So the downside of that is I didn't that wasn't taught to me. I didn't learn anything. So it was great. I came in with a clean slate. But it's hard to know where to go from there. And I was told, well, you know, if you just crack the door and you're open to it, the light gets through the crack. It will come to you. And that really has been my experience. So it's sort of fun being able to build your own higher power. You know, it's like getting the big box of Legos and saying, you know, do what moves you. But it's also a little confusing, and it's scary. And it's really been a journey of trust for me. I really didn't have that trust or faith in God. I didn't learn what it felt like. And so it's been kind of an experience having to put that together. But it's been really fulfilling because, you know, when you do it yourself, you get to own the results. So that's my gift from sobriety. And, you know, I really have cherished humility. I don't take myself too seriously in AA. I took myself real seriously before that. And it was pretty ugly. You know, when you're having to carry around the entire freaking weight of the planet on your shoulders because no one else will do it, for God's sakes. Step up, people. Shit's heavy. Exactly. You know, I really love to be a woman among women, a worker among workers, a mom among moms, and just ordinary, card-carrying member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Am I done? There's a sign for that. Who else has tried to bail early? I know there were people who wanted to share who didn't get to. I saw them. You know, working the steps has been a long, slow process for me. I want to share that too. Maybe there's a prize for finishing first. If there is, I didn't get it. I have 8 years of sobriety, and I still haven't really finished the steps. I've tried a few times, and I've kind of done my thing. I have wonderful sponsorship. Do not blame them. It is not their fault. And I just am basically almost constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. The bottom line is that denial is that strong. It kept me drinking a long time, and it's kept me from the steps more than I would like. But I do them to the best of my ability and as deep as I can. And I've had a lot of great tools and suggestions put before me that I've really sort of cherished. And I am down to the end of the road, so don't be totally discouraged that it was a big fail. But, you know, it's been an interesting journey for me. I had a lot of damage, and I had a lot of loss that I just didn't, I'm just not that connected to that type of understanding. This is a true story. It wasn't until I had been driving for some time, and I was on a long stretch of road on my way to school, that I realized going 60 miles an hour meant you would go 60 miles in an hour. This is what you're working with. Don't hold the sponsor responsible for this. I just, you know, there's this sort of kind of naivete about my life that just isn't connected to what's real. And it's hard to grasp that. I lived in fantasy a lot as a kid because I just had a really awful place to be most of the time. And that was good. I read a lot. I've lived in these happy little worlds of life. And then, you know, without any real tools of how to do my deal, I was just pretty insufferable and delusional most of the time. It's been really interesting to break it down into 12 steps and try to figure all that out. Trust has been a big part of my sobriety of late. Faith in a higher power and trust in God that that all will be revealed. It's just work lately has been really challenging. I'm not doing well. It's been sort of like that in my sobriety, where it's been this up and down. I like to be, I like to do well. I like to pull my weight. I used to use that to define me. Now I've changed my perception, and I use it to be of love and service. So doing well is just, how can I help you? How can I make this better for you? What can I do for my clients, for my coworkers? But it's still hard when, you know, you're not getting the results that you want or that you are capable of. It's really been a struggle. And so, you know, I just feel like I have everything I need to be successful in my career. I have great people, great guidance, great company, great everything. And I just have to, now my job is to just do the footwork and leave the results up to God. I kind of wish he would hurry, I'm not going to lie. But I'm okay with one day at a time, just going and doing my thing. It still makes me cry, because this is a little sad and it's a little scary to think, what if it doesn't? How's that going to work out? So you can see why this is an exercise about trusting God. I haven't totally nailed it, but I feel like I'm really trying. I know after all that dramatic, incredible story of recovery, I'm crying over my job. At least I have one, A. B, they still think I can do it, at least for the moment. And C, I have a 3-day weekend. Why am I even thinking about it? Shop there till Tuesday. Okay, now am I done? Okay, where's the please wrap up sign? Is there a please wrap up sign? 3 minutes left. I know, you guys can ask me questions about this incredible and terrifying journey that I'm on. So, I'm Sandra, I'm an alcoholic from Orange. Thanks for letting me share. Okay, sit.
At this time, we can turn the meeting over to our speaker for a question and answer period.
What's really left to tell?
You said you go to a Wednesday meeting. What is it and where is it?
I go to the Wednesday Women's Solutions meeting. It is at Church of the Foothills, right up the street, 7 to 8:30. We don't tell the newcomers. It's an hour and a half just to see what they do when the clock hits the hour. It's all the fun we really have left. It's a wonderful meeting. It's a warm and loving room, and I strongly recommend it. The most fun I had in sobriety. Oh my gosh. You know what? I honestly think, however stupid it sounds, it was that one time when I was able to push the stroller through the gates of Disneyland without a sippy cup full of red wine. Like, you don't know what it's like not to be anchored to that bottle. Yeah. Well, for me, it was an obsession. I didn't understand. I thought my dad made really, really bad choices. I thought he made a lot of really bad choices. I didn't know he was crushed by an obsession with alcohol that consumed his entire life. So yeah, that was fun. You know, getting on the ride sober, dancing, all these things that you thought you needed to be totally loaded for. Anyway, sorry, go ahead. I am, I will tell you, my oldest was 12 when I got sober. He's now 20 and in college, so he is an Eagle Scout, that very same kid. And again, the gifts of sobriety, that I could be there for him and help support him and help him get through that process, because now I know that their success does not define me. I had to be responsible for that before. It was one of the many burdens that I shouldered. And so now I know what a gift to get my joy through their success. He owns that. That is his personal gift that he earned. I showed up along the way at the time I could drive, you know, and just was there for him, for these achievements. And that's a beautiful gift of Alcoholics Anonymous for me, because I didn't know that when I came in here. Johnny?
Do you have anything that you do on a daily basis, like prayer meditation this morning or anything?
You know, that's an interesting topic. I've experimented with that. I read, not all that long ago, maybe a couple years now, the book Drop the Rock, which is not AA related, but is written by people in the program. And it was really a gift for me because at the time I didn't know that prayer was an action. You know, after step three, they're all action steps. And so it was really great for me to read that because I've started to take enormous comfort in prayer. And sometimes when I'm totally spinning, it's just, you know, God, please help. But when I'm more clear, basically every morning I ask God to come in to run my life, for my words to be the words of God, for him to come in to run my business, and just relieve myself of that burden because I'm so quick to take it. And they're not my burdens. I'm doing the footwork. God will release, you release those to God, he will take them. So I basically every morning ask God to come in and run my life, and I turn my will over to God on a daily basis. I have also, I was so delighted to hear it today, I've taken so much peace and comfort in the third step prayer. My people will know just exactly how long it took me to memorize it. Remember the 60 miles an hour thing? Doesn't just end there. But I say it, it's like a mantra. It's so soothing and peaceful and comforting to me, and it's a big part of my faith in a higher power. So that's a process that I continue as an action to try to build. So I just find the third step prayer to be especially comforting. You know, it's interesting. I think just except for the first step, which, you know, again, the Cub Scouts helped me through, I have found them all to be challenging. You know, I can read the 12 and 12 over and over again. I go to a monthly step study meeting that my sponsor has, and I get so many more gifts every time. I think I have this sort of standard that it's okay what I understand at the time, but you know how each time you do it, you know, more will be revealed, another layer of that onion is just, in my case, it usually goes two layers at once. So I just find that they're so deep and fulfilling, and my journey is happening so incrementally, I don't realize it. And so I think I have this mental process around learning them that's not, you never just do it and complete it. You know, I could stay on one step for my life, and I would just keep, you know, deepening my understanding of that. So I guess everybody probably has a different process. Some people will whip through them. They get what they get out of them, then they whip through them again, or they kind of go through these cycles. And then in a case like mine, it's just been sort of a long, slow journey through them. You know, I've worked them, I've gone back, and I've worked them again, and just throughout this whole process, it's just kind of been this continuous evolution. I didn't share a lot about, you know, sort of the drunk log and, you know, how sort of a painful, you know, my disease was. It, when I came in, you know, the blue cards with the 20 questions. So when I first did them and I came in the door, and I believe me, had no trouble other than being terrified to say it, I knew I was an alcoholic. Step one was really something, you know, I was able to grasp very quickly. And like I said, when I strayed from it, then the Cub Scout showed up. So I was able to get 5. You know, you need 3 and you might have a problem, and I got 5. Okay, today I'm at 17. I'm convinced I'm going to get the last 3. I haven't yet. I'm so trying. But I just really get honest. But it's a layer of honesty. And I'm as honest as I can be at the time. And then I just keep continuing that process. So I think it's more of just sort of a style of how I learn and grow. Good thing it's only suggested how we're supposed to work them, right? Is we done?
Well, yeah, we got to wrap it up. So thank you very much.
Okay. Yes.